We started this Congress talking about a thing called a CLEAR. On your Congress program, there is a misprint. It says, definition of a CLEAR, one who can be knowingly and willingly at cause over life, matter, energy, space, and time. That's not a CLEAR. CLEAR is a book one definition. It's a person without an engram bank. Don't get mixed up. That program definition is operating Thetan. That's an operating Thetan. It's obvious that a person who had total control over life, matter, energy, space, and time could mock up an army that everybody could see. But we're talking about a CLEAR, and that was our goal in Book One, and I think it's enough at this Congress that I announce its attainment. Small thing. By lots of auditors. See, it's being attained now. And I want to very hastily go over CLEAR procedure with you and supplement its material just a little bit, particularly with regard to Step 6. And maybe I can give you a little clearer understanding what this is all about. The earlier steps are devoted to keeping a session in progress and are devoted to keeping a pre-clear under control enough so that he will run the processes. Do you see that? Now, the 19th ACC will be devoted to these processes, and they will all be used and thoroughly supervised. If you don't make that, at the same time, don't feel discouraged and say, well, I'm not supposed to use CLEAR procedure because I didn't attend the 19th ACC. I expect most of you to be in the 19th ACC, so that's a safe remark to make. I would actually like to have the privilege of teaching you personally about this sort of thing. But nevertheless, you got smart brains, and that's a subtle Scientology insult. Well, we have here the earlier part of this devoted to how to keep a session in progress and how to keep the participation of a person rolling and how to get him enough under control so that we can do the crux of the situation, which is one of the briefer steps outlined. And it's only half a page here. It's on page 24, CLEAR procedure, and it says, Chapter 8, Step 6, Creative Processing. Well, you all know all about creative processing, and if you don't, you should get Scientology 88008 and get as garbled as I did. But you ought to read its basic and background theory, because it's given in there quite succinctly. But this is simply the most condensed statement of the mechanics involved in the creation of a CLEAR that I could make. I might be able to get a few words out of here the way you do out of telegrams. You know, erase some articles and prepositions and so forth. But it couldn't be condensed much more than it is there, and if anything, you may find it a little too condensed. So much so that I have, along with every other writing job I have waiting for me, the whole people come in to see me at the desk, and the whole front of the desk is stacked up with papers, manuscripts, and notes, you see, on my hat, writing. And then back over here alongside of a big bank of tape recorders is a box, and it is totally stacked up with blue folders, and each one of them is a book. Otherwise, I'm not much behind. And creative processing will be scheduled as a book, but you'll see it sometime this year. Probably toward the end of the year, however. Length of time it takes to get something out. But the whole thing, the whole story of creative processing is one of the more fabulous things you can do with somebody's mind. Well, actually, what process could there be except creative processing if you address the mind? What else is there in the mind but mental image pictures and the automaticities one assumes to handle them? Well, now, if that's all there is in the mind, then creative processing does cover this field called the mind. Do you see that? It possibly is almost a closer cousin to Dianetics than to Scientology. Do you see that? But in Scientology, we consider it this way. And therefore, creative processing handled from a Scientology viewpoint would be increasing the confidence of a thetan in his ability to handle mental image pictures, not erase or straighten out mental image pictures. That was the goal in Dianetics. In Dianetics, we were straightening out these pictures, and in Scientology, we're getting the person, the being himself, to straighten out these pictures. You see. Now, therefore, the total emphasis of this step, get this very well, is to increase confidence, increase ability. And all the goals in clear procedure, step by step, are simply added up to making it possible to run this step six, creative processing. And its goal is to bring a person into the full and complete realization that he himself creates his own mind. You understand that? So that in book one, you read all about the reactive mind, which is below the level of consciousness. Now, this individual has got to become so conscious that he knows he's even creating his reactive mind. In other words, these reactivities, which are the total study of older psychologies. Reactivity, interaction of pictures, stimulus response. These were totally the subject of Pavlov's studies, Wundt's studies. Only they didn't even know what they were studying. They hadn't even noticed the picture. Now, Dianetics noticed the picture and said you could do something about it. Scientology has come along and taken the person and placed him in a position where he can create these pictures when he wants them. Now, fortunately for us, as a man improves in his awareness and ability, he improves in ethical sense. As you remove the limitations on his action, he actually does improve in his social ability to act. How fortunate that is. It could be quite another way. It could be the way the psychologist said it was. Man was basically a beast. And that he needed more and more punishment and more barriers to make him better and better. There was even a book published some years ago, I'll Be Glad You're Neurotic. Well, that is so far from the truth that as a writer, I can tell you quite vividly that my speed of writing and ability to cope with writing and artistry in the field of writing went downhill to the degree that it went on automatic. And toward the end of the 30s, my production was nowhere near as high as it had been in the early part of the 30s because I had set up a whole bunch of mental bric-a-brac to do the job for me, and I had reactively begun to write. You get the idea? In other words, my writing had become, if anything, neurotic. You get the idea? Be glad you're neurotic indeed. In other words, the more reactive bank I got, the less speed and accuracy there was in my writing. Do you see that? And it wasn't until Dianetics came along and took a scoop shovel to an awful lot of this stuff, and I got a clear view of things again, that I started to write with any speed. You see that? I used to have a feeling all the time that I ought to be writing. Regardless of what I was doing, I ought to be writing, you know. It had finally seeped in to a point where I knew I ought to be writing. And the more I got that, the less I wrote. You see that? And after a while, when I didn't give a darn whether I wrote or not, and I had no compulsion to do so, I was doing much, much better. Speed was up, lots of things came up. Fortunately, man is better off sane than crazy. I know that sounds like a remarkably sort of stupid remark, but it would sound like an incorrect one if neurosis makes us do all the good things. You see, if it was right to be neurotic, then of course it's righter to be psychotic, isn't it? So obviously, the more insane a person is, the more benefit he is to the society, if you follow out this same line of logic. That doesn't sound right to you, does it? Well, believe me, it'd sound right to the old schools of psychology. It sounds right to the psychoanalyst. Be glad you're neurotic. All artists write to sublimate their deadlier passions. Therefore, this whole of creating processing on page 24 of Scientology Clear Procedure, Issue 1, is devoted to the exact technical steps that should be taken by the auditor after he has a pre-clear in session, in pretty good shape, has him able to control facsimiles and obey the auditor's commands. When he's got him up to that state, he can run this step. He can't run this step unless he has got the thing under control. You see that? Control is a necessary part of all of this. Therefore, we have here the first step on this, in some cases, is conquering black field and invisible field. Well, now, in the 19th ACC, instructors take note, we are going to divide the unit up into three broad groups. One with good mental pictures, easily attained, mental pictures questionably attained, and what pictures? Three groups. Got that? So that we don't get co-auditing between somebody with brilliant pictures and somebody with an invisible field. Because the fellow with the invisible field will not be able to believe that the other fellow has pictures, and the fellow with pictures won't be able to believe that the other fellow has an invisible field. There's a... Now, a fellow who is auditing somebody with questionable or misbehaving pictures, of course, will understand this if his own pictures are questionable and misbehaving. Now, when we have an invisible field or a black field, it is necessary to remedy that thing before you go on to the rest of it. Now, one of these days, I will probably discover some even more positive method of doing this, but the method we have right now is positive enough. And that method is as follows. You mock up what the field is and push it into the body until the field clears. You got that? It's a very elementary step. Person has a black field. It's all black. If he will just mock up blacknesses, you have him mock up blacknesses and shove them into the body, mock up blacknesses and shove them into the body, mock up blacknesses and shove them into the body, he will then have a cleared field. In that, he'll be able to get a picture. Now, the first things he does with a picture after you've cleaned up a black field is usually very amusing in this day and age. He dramatizes motion picture screens and television sets and puts the picture against something so that he can get the picture against blackness. You got this? He can get the picture against blackness as long as he has the blackness. But if you ask him this one question, this rather changes the whole thing. What is the blackness? And he will find out that he's mocking up pictures against the underside of his eyelids. He can just as easily, if you take him up a gradient scale in size, they're little tiny pictures. They're just microscopic pictures mocked up against the back side of his eyelids. And if you ask him to get them bigger and bigger in size, you can get them against a book held here or against a door or a wall, and he can get pictures. Well, what's he dramatizing? He's dramatizing projection. The pictures aren't given by projection, but you can get him over this. As soon as you get him to remedy havingness to a point where he's got a cleared field then, it is necessary for you to coach him on a gradient scale until he can mock up a picture, any kind of a picture. And you have him mock that picture up. And when he is pretty good at just that, just mocking it up, you remedy his havingness with it. Which is to say, you have him mock up the picture and push it into the body, and mock up the picture and throw it away. Well, the steps that you have to go to get him to throw it away, and some of the cleverness that you have to assume in order to do this, is often quite amusing. Right there, it requires some inventiveness. How do you get somebody to throw away a picture? That's pretty wild on some cases. Most of you wouldn't believe it, but they can't do it. I had one case mock up an elephant and have the elephant walk out the door. Perfectly all right. But the person has got to be able to pull in a picture and throw a picture away in order to have any control of a picture at all. Now, if a person mocks up one picture and then he can't throw that picture away, have him mock up another picture, duplicate of it, and a duplicate, and a duplicate, and a duplicate, and finally, after he's done it five or six times, he can throw the fifth or sixth one away. And then if he mocks up two or three more, he can throw the eighth one away. You get the idea? And eventually, he'll be able to mock up a picture and throw it away, mock up a picture and put it in. When he gets into that state, only then are you in the running. Now you have begun. You've got his field clear, and you have some control over these pictures so they don't go into vast automaticities. Do you see that? Now, supposing the black field was more resistive than any I have encountered. Ever since 1950, I've been totally prepared to have something like that happen. But cases come up in your view that don't come up in mine. That cases occur which are different or vary in some respect. Now, I haven't seen a new type of case that we didn't know about for many years. But I just soon one came up that wouldn't solve on this black, mock up a black object in the blackness and shove it into your body. Supposing it didn't solve on that. I actually would go out and get a couple of pieces of coal or something like that, and I'd simply have the person keep that piece of coal from going away with his hands over here, and then got the black field until it was less resistive because of this hand drill. And then I would have him mock up blackness and shove it into the body. You get the idea? Otherwise, I'd undercut it with a material object. Similarly, with invisible objects, the invisible field didn't clear up rather rapidly this way. Then I would get a couple of pieces of glass or several pieces of glass and have the person keep these pieces of glass from going away and have him run drills with these objects until at last the invisible field could surrender to a point where he could mock up invisibilities and shove them into the body, invisibilities, and throw them away. Get him to do that. And I'd be very sure that this took place before I went any further with the person's processing. You understand that? All right. Now, what would be the next step? Well, the next step is a very cute one. This whole thing is faster with an e-meter. I actually am trying to get some e-meters manufactured that would sell for good ones, transistor meters, that would sell for maybe $62.50 less discount, less member discount. Transistor meters that would work out. Not because you don't have meters available here and there, but because there are certainly new Scientologists coming up and they'll need them. It isn't absolutely necessary to run this stuff against a meter, but a meter can make it faster. You can run faster so that you never do the step unnecessarily. When it's flat, it's flat. The meter's no longer reacting. You just flatten the reaction on the meter on each one of these steps. All right, let's say that you've cleared up his invisible field or cleared up his black field. You've done it with pieces of coal or mock-ups, as I have described. What's your next step? Nah, nothing could be more simple, my dear Watson. You find six non-significant things which graduate in size and mass here, see? Get the idea. Six of them. Now that could go from an apple to a building to a planet to a sun, to a black sun, to a universe, or something like that, on an extremity. You get the idea? Or it could come something like a particle, or maybe a grain of rice or something, or a particle, tiny particle, up to a walnut or something like this, up to, let us say, non-significant object, up to a jar of some sort, you know, up to a chair, up to a house, up to a building. They've got to be a gradient scale of size, don't you see? And they mustn't be significant. In other words, as you call them off and try to arrange them with the preclear, an E-meter's invaluable here. Because an E-meter will kick every time you get a significant object and you come off of it quick. You want six of them, you spend time picking them out. The time you spend picking them out and making sure that they are not significant or upsetting to the preclear in any way will pay you 1,000 times over in getting the processing on the road. You got the idea? So you got six items now. Regardless of what they were, the fellow has some confidence in being able to mock these things up, and they don't knock his head off because he does. All right. We have him take this first one. We have him mock it up and keep it from going away. We have him mock it up and keep it from going away. Did you, we ask? Good. Mock it up, whatever it was. Mock up the grain of rice and keep it from going away. Did you do that? Thank you. Mock up the grain of rice and keep it from going away. Did you do that? Thank you. And when we have no further kick on the meter or no reaction in the preclear of any kind because of doing this one little first thing, we graduate to the next non-significant object on our list. And we do the same thing. And let us say that this was a walnut. And we say, all right, we bridge it very nicely. And then we say, mock up a walnut and keep it from going away. Did you? Yes. All right. We flatten that. Now, it may take you anywhere from 5 minutes to 5 hours to flatten it. And you'll find, oddly enough, that they vary. You may flatten three of these objects in 10 minutes apiece and then spend 3.5 hours on the next one. Get the idea? It's not a certain length of time, then. It's mocking it up and keeping it from going away until it is flat. In other words, there's no further reaction or restimulation or upset or comm lag in the preclear. You can always tell these things also by comm lags. Now, we don't care whether this fellow's getting any cognitions or not. Not at this stage of the game. Now, we bridge it up here to the next object, and we have him mock that up and keep it from going away until that's flat. Then we bridge into the next higher object, mock it up and keep it from going away until it's flat. Next object, bigger, mark it up and keep it from going away until that's flat. Now the final object, mark it up and keep it from going away until that's flat. Got that? See, and we just run that whole thing, each one flat. Now we take the same objects and run, hold it still. And we run that in this fashion. Mark up a grain of rice and hold it still. Did you? Thank you. Mark up a grain of rice and hold it still. Did you? Thank you. Got that? Simple. Now, when that is flat, he may have some difficulty, but the difficulty damps out and he gets better and better at it. By the way, we've never asked him, did you mock that up? Are you sure that you mocked that up? We don't do that to him. Why? Not at this stage of the game. It's a triumph for him just to have it appear from somewhere. Don't rattle him. This all goes on a gradient. You're asking him to discover at once what he'll discover sooner or later for himself. So we come up the line, mock up a walnut, hold it still. Did you? Thank you. All right. And then we get that flat. We come up here to the next object, mock up the next object, hold it still. Did you? Thank you. Got the idea? Till we get all six of these objects flat. You can mock each one of them up and hold it still. Nothing to it. All right. Now, we've got that flat. We bridge over to the next one. which is make it a little more solid. And we have him mark up the grain of rice and make it a little more solid. Did you? Thank you. Mark up the grain of rice and make it a little more solid. Did you? Thank you. All right, here we go then. Right on up the line, each one of these six objects we flatten in turn until he can make all of them solid. Now you say, we're all set. Now we have gone somewhere. Yes, sir, this is where we've gone. It's a very, very difficult process. You get six more objects, not necessarily bigger or different, but just six more objects that are apparently relatively non-significant. And you have to keep the first one from going away until that's flat. The next one going away till that's flat. The next one going away till that's flat. The next one going away. Get the idea? Six new objects. And then, when we have finally gotten that done, we have him hold each one still until he can do it. And then we have him make it more solid. Same way we did the first time, don't you see, but with six new objects. And when we got that all flat, we dream up six new objects. And by this time, we don't care whether they're significant or not. We could have him mock up mothers or cats or kangaroos. It wouldn't matter whether they banged on the needle or not, because his confidence is sufficient now that he could ladle in to a bit of the reactive kick that he's going to get in the bank. So he chose these next ones rather carelessly. We've been so far successful, and we have another set of six. We don't get them because they are significant. Don't read that. We just don't care whether they are or not. And we get these from the preclear. We don't dream them up as much as we ask the preclear for them, but we're liable to change them. You say, what's a small object you think you could mock up? Oh, he says, I think I could mock up a needle. And the thing goes wham and drops five dials. And you say, well, that's fine. How about a pin? Oh, he says, a pin's all right, and there's nothing happens with a pin. You say, all right, we'll take the first one for a pin. You get the way you decide these things? All right, so we have these. But this next time, as we go up the line, we don't care whether they're significant or not, and we suddenly select out all of these objects one after the other, and we just run the same scale. Keep it from going away, hold it still, make it a little more solid. See? We don't run all three on the same object. We run the object flat, the next object flat, and all the whole series flat on keep it from going away. Then we graduate the whole series to hold it still. Then we graduate the whole series to make it a little more solid. All right. If that is the case, where does this finally wind up? And what new, startling thing do we do? Nothing. Nothing. Because those steps all by themselves will finally wind up making a clear. There isn't anything more you have to do. Now, one of these fine days, you may get smarter, you may get smart, and we might dream up a little shorter cut or something we say after that has to be done, or we decide we'd better clean up the dynamics. But wait a minute. You're working on OT. Got it? And I'm not describing to you the techniques for operating Thetan. I'm describing you the techniques for a clear. Now, you got that pretty well? Seems pretty simple, doesn't it? Well, I'll recommend an E-meter to you, and you can build them or beg them or borrow them or steal them or not use them or anything else. We don't care. The only reason the organization would fool around with E-meters is just if there is a demand. Somebody shouldn't be left without a meter. We wouldn't try to make any money off of one. The main thing of it is they just, if they're in demand, they're in, should be in supply. We're not trying to go into business. We've already had trouble with somebody commercializing e-meters. We had a pretty good meter. It was the HIR-52. That was a good meter. And it's quite reliable, had a range expander. You didn't find cases that were off the bottom, or too many cases didn't go off the top. But we did find this. We found that the manufacture of that meter got more and more complicated and added more and more dials and more things, and there were less and less constants, and finally auditors couldn't use them at all, and it all but destroyed the idea of e-meters. What is an E-meter, after all? It's to register the reaction existing in a preclear. We don't even care how it registers it or what theory we go by in registering it. All it does is register it. It tells you something is happening in this person's bank. In other words, it tells you about energy displacements. And there are three reactions that an E-meter gets or that we consider common. And these three reactions are they're nothing very important. There may be other reactions than this, but the main ones I can tell you. One, a stuck needle. That is one of the better tests. Or a theta bop. We call a theta bop. It's a little hunt. That is always an exteriorization or a death registering. That's there's no exceptions. The only thing that explains it or clears it. Right? And the other one is a surge. Drops. The meter drops. It falls part of a dial. And that is the one that most auditors think is the only one there. You see, they think that's the only one present, this surge. Actually, there's a stuck needle that tells you even more than a surge, if anything. The needle just goes, whap. And you say, kings, cats, coal heavers, your mother-in-law, are you telling a lie or anything else? You got your needle frozen. Tisn't going anyplace. Well, you must have frozen it with a question. If you don't know that stuck needle's significant, or that you can tell something from a stuck needle, you're liable not to pay attention the first time it sticks. And that's the one you want, because you're liable to have to go back and hunt for it all over again. Only the needle now isn't telling you anything. Those three main reactions, but I'll tell you the virtue of an E-meter. Now, a lot of people say, I don't know why you use an E-meter, because it invalidates the auditor, invalidates the preclear, and so forth. No, on creative processing or present time problem, when you're running by mock-up, there is something here which is rather poor, and that is that an individual here, doesn't see, ordinarily, the preclear's mock-ups. And he feels like he's sitting there doing nothing. There's nothing for the auditor to look at, don't you see? The auditor is not facing up to any mass. So he doesn't see what is going on, and he begins to feel a little bit lost, as though he's reaching into nothingness. You get the idea? Well, if you can translate that onto a meter dial and keep your eye on a meter dial, you are looking at the mock-ups. You get the idea? So the meter simply translates the mock-ups into physical reaction. You see that? And actually, an auditor is sometimes much more willing to run creative processing if he has a meter to look at. On the 19th, we're going to use meters as they are available. We hope to do all auditing on meters, just because most of the auditing will be creative processes. Now, the goal of this particular thing is, of course, to get the individual up to a point where he recognizes, subjectively and with good reality, that he's putting up all these pictures himself. Well, this one cognition isn't enough. See, that's not enough. You've got to give him practice in doing it. And after a while, he'll become totally cognizant that he never does anything else. That's the cognition that you want. That's all the pictures. That's pictures. Now, it may be necessary for you somewhere along the line to run some havingness or invent some problems or to do something like that. The fellow starts falling downstairs or something in order to have a new game. Well, that's for you to recognize when it occurs. But so far, it has not occurred doing this particular step. So there must be more value to mocking this sort of thing up and doing this particular step than immediately appears. The final result of this is the destruction of the bank. Now, the ability to create a bank and the ability to mock things up was recognized years ago, but I had not gotten together the exact progressive steps necessary to accomplish this particular result in all preclears. And this apparently is the road that does that. Now, the use of this particular step should not be adventured upon without running the earlier steps. That's why they are there, and that's why creative processing flops, is because it is attempted without flattening any of the earlier steps. Well, what are some of these early steps? Well, one of them here is you've got to keep the PC participating in session. He has to continue to participate. He has to go on believing, as I told you an earlier day in this Congress, he has to go on believing in your ability to help him, and his belief in his ability to help somebody. And when help falls out the window, participation goes. And not only that, ARC drops by the boards. ARC, therefore, has to be maintained during a session. Anytime that drops out, this won't work. The process won't work. It's the auditor doing it. It's just the things the auditor does, and also how he does them, that brings about this state. You got that? All right, we look over here, and we find the second step. We have to place the pre-cleared cause. Well, we can't totally take a pre-clear who is totally in effect with regard to the physical universe and expect him to wind up miraculously at cause because we have simply run some creative processing, don't you see? If he can never be cause of anything, anywhere, at any time, he's not going to come up on top with this step alone, don't you see? He has to be prepared for that step, and that's covered in Chapter 4. Then in Chapter 5, establish the control of PC's body by PC is old SCS. And we have a full book back there. Johann just edited off some tapes, and we got published for you just so you'd have these mechanics in even a fuller state than they are in this clear procedure. Now, we get over here to Step 4. We, of course, be a good thing for him to know who was auditing him, because if he gets involved and subjective with his creative processing, he's liable to think his mother's there or something and kick your shins in. We shouldn't have that happen. Now, we have this next step, and we have the pre-clear versus messed. Give him some idea of being cause over messed. And then we finally, only then, get to creative processing. Now, whether we do Step 7 or Step 8 is totally beside the point. It has nothing to do with a clear, because we're already moving with those steps into the field of operating Thetan. It might interest you these days, the way I'm auditing. My auditing styles normally don't shift around too much. Only time it shifted is when we got Comcourse and Upper Indoc, and I got a lot of this myself and smoothed out some rough spots of just being able to duplicate and so forth, to the pre-clear's viewpoint and benefit. The steps that we got there did help me. It was quite an interesting thing for me to dream up something and then drill on it and then have some improvement take place. I was quite amused by that. Ordinarily, this sort of thing wouldn't occur. But it was fabulous. I found myself sitting there pitching in session. I told the auditors that I was going to give this thing a whirl, and I held myself in as thorough a discipline as I was teaching auditors. See? Just thorough discipline, just iron-barred sort of auditing, you know. Getting the intention across, being very sure of the accuracy of every piece of the auditing and the step, so on. And boy, auditing speed, which has never been terribly slow with me, just speeded up just like this, you know. I mean, the results started to get across to the degree that I was running a discipline on it. Well, since that time, using an e-meter, I relaxed a little bit, and I haven't worried too much about a discipline that's still there. But I have worried about this. The block on the dynamics. I conceive that in auditing a preclear, it is necessary to get a preclear off some dispersal so that he feels like he's going out of session and wants to leave, and he thinks there are other things to be done. And I just sit down and improve his communication with me as one of the first things I do. And I do that by, I do this with an e-meter, by the way, just to save wear and tear and eye strain on my Thetan. I try to improve his ability to communicate by knocking out some comm blocks. Well, one of these comm blocks could be a present-time problem, so I scout down a present-time problem and I get rid of it by inventing something worse than the problem, problem of comparable magnitude to the problem, and what he could do to that particular thing in one way or another. And I really clean this thing up pretty good, so it won't be driving him out of session. Very often a pre-clear will sit there, you know, and say, no, there is nothing worrying me, but if you had him on an e-meter, the needle will drop off the pin. This is why we start using e-meters again. A whole intensive can be wasted if a pre-clear has a present-time problem the auditor doesn't flatten. Whole intensive, it can just, there's no change on the APA at all. Now we go back, clean up the present-time problem, audit him for another week, and get a terrific change. or the same processes that didn't work on him before. You got the idea? These null changes, after you've auditored for a while, are due to this PT problem, the present time problem. Preclear feels like he ought to be out of session, out somewhere doing something other, or he ought to be running like the devil for Mexico or someplace and getting out of the road of the juggernauts of fate, and you insist on auditing him. Then he doesn't improve at all. His mind isn't in his work at all, and this, certainly his mind isn't under your control. It's under the control of this other factor. So to knock out this other factor as a control factor, you knock out the PT problem. You got it? All right, then I'd locate a comm block. Contra-survival postulate. That's what I'm looking for, and it's usually a communication postulate. And I trace this thing down, I don't care. You know, there are a lot of people that would have you believe that because past lives aren't generally believed in, you should avoid them. Well, I tell you, I've tried to avoid them. But I have yet to find a comm block in the person's present life. Isn't this horrible? In other words, when I'm working with an e-meter, I have to clean them out of Lord knows when. It's always way back down the track someplace. I just say, well, what would be the penalty for talking or something of this sort? I try to run it down, or I sort out the dynamics. Now, you can use the direct formula of operating thetan, preclear at cause, or thetan at cause, rather, over life, matter, energy, space, and time. Willing and knowing cause. So you ask him what he could do to God. This is an opening question. What he could say to God would be a lighter version. And by the way, I want to straighten that out with you. You know, I'm not upset in any way about the eighth dynamic. I just maintain that people who can't get to the first don't know a thing about the eighth. My only contention. That's why I get sarcastic about it every once in a while. I get some guy that doesn't know his own wife trying to tell me about God. I get very interested. Anyway, I just peel off the dynamics right on down. No matter what the guise of the question is, I come right on down the dynamics. 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. And I find those things where the preclear conceives himself to be a total effect on these dynamics. Only I'm looking for a comm block. I'm looking for a communication block. I'm looking for a time when he considered he couldn't do anything to that dynamic. And when I find one of these, I clean it up. With what? Well, if the case is in pretty good shape, I clean it up with two-way comm. If the case is only mediumly in good shape, I clean it up with some process more or less tailor-made to the occasion. Somebody came in the other day with a bad stomach, and I had hit the stomach. You know, mentally, hit the stomach with a feather, which caused great bruises. We went up a gradient scale, haven't even finished yet, but went up a gradient scale of tapping the stomach with various things. This would, of course, lead to a willingness to be at cause over the stomach. But we didn't say, hit it and brutalize it. We said, what are you willing to hit that stomach with? You get the idea? Just using the operating thetan formula and processing by it, finding out where the preclear considered himself to be a total effect, and asking him in some fashion or another what he could do about it. Well, you'll find that most cases have a very few major communication blocks. In the year 1262, the fellow suddenly decided that prayer was no good, that one had just better obey and trust it to fate and skip the rest of it. Now you don't even find him believing in a supreme being, but being the subject of luck, or being the effect of something, he can't tell what. You find out that he conceived there was still a God, but he couldn't talk to him. You get the idea. He couldn't do anything to him. So therefore, he is now, generations later, hundreds of years later, where the fellow is still walking around being totally the subject of something or other. Well, remember, we didn't always have a Christian Yahweh. There's Moloch, Baal, and other less pleasant characters. And sometimes when you clean this up on a pre-clear, you've really done a job. It goes kind of swoosh, you know? Sometimes when you get the early postulate on this sort of thing, you don't bury him into the facsimile, which he is mocking up himself, but he nevertheless can get buried in it. You don't bury him in the facsimile. You just hit it lightly, and if he comes to a cognition on it or something like that, believe me, he'll arrive. Now, don't try to run it out of him or something of the sort. Just let him hit it and get a recognition on the thing. You sometimes have to scan lightly from there up to present time, you know, and get all the rest of the nutty postulates out that he's made on the same subject. And boy, some of those things are really insane. And yet he'll sit there and tell them to you as the most reasonable things. But now that you've gotten the pin postulate out, the first one, the main one, the big one, out of the line, the rest of them at only for a moment seem reasonable to him, and then they go, flick, and out they go. Well, once you've cleaned up these communication breaks, you can talk to your preclear. And after you can talk to him, you can do these other control steps and so forth with great rapidity, and you can swing into creative process and get him to patch up the bank with speed that you would hardly believe. I'm just giving you an idea. That's the way I handle it. It isn't necessary for you to handle it this way at all. In fact, this isn't really the sort of thing that is talked about here in clear procedure. I'm processing by definition when I'm first trying to clean up the case. Processing by definition. I figure out what the preclear is up against and just tend to knock it out. What am I handling there? I'm handling the psychoses and the neuroses that are resident in the bank, the nutty postulates. Get the idea? Which takes care of that. Now, if you don't do that, and if you don't discuss life with it, don't worry about it, because after you've done this step, even though those nuttinesses made the auditing sort of rough, he'll sometimes go along for several weeks before he runs into one of these old postulates himself and falls through on it. So when you have finished auditing the person, do not then believe that the auditing is over. You've audited maybe for 30 or 40 or 50 hours on this procedure. Everything I made happen early in the session will happen anyway, if you use clear procedure, and he'll go on with livingness, perhaps for months, before he himself suddenly fishes up one of these old postulates and sees that it doesn't agree with the environment. He is no longer forcing himself into a set of barriers, and therefore his postulates are free. You get the idea? So what I've just talked to you about freeing the track and so forth with a meter, happens inevitably. But you can give it a boost very definitely that way. Well, here we are. I hope very much that this will help you. It's quite a step forward, although apparently with old materials, remember, it is verily newly done. And some of you old-timers better listen to what I said there, because this is the sequence. Took me 7 years to find it out. All right. I'm not saying you have to do what I'm doing just because I'm doing it. I'm saying you better if you want the results. Anyway. All right. Well, this brings us right on down here to the end of this particular Congress, except for the party tonight. And it's been a very great pleasure talking to you. I hope some of the things that we have done here and some of the things that have been said will prove beneficial to you. I do not think it has been a wasted period of time. I hope that some of these processes and some of the theory will be of interest to you. And more important, I hope that you have, if you're new in this, now have some confidence on auditing. And I want to thank the seminar leaders for the very fine job they've done. I want to thank the hostess and the Congress manager for the fine job they've done. I want to thank all the people who've been sitting behind the desks and taking care of the books and things. And I want to particularly thank you for being here. You've been a very wonderful audience. Thank you. I'll see you this summer.